Well, it's my pleasure to be here with you today. I'm always love getting a chance to spend some time with women who are very interested in making a difference in their churches and being actively involved. It's really encouraging to me. So I'm thrilled that you have chosen to be a part of this track. And we've got several very good speakers coming after me over today and tomorrow. So I hope you'll stick around and hear some of the other things that they have to say, but it's a real pleasure to be with you. Well, I thought I might start out kind of giving you a little bit of background information on myself about how I got here, because I have a deep interest in the spiritual development of women. If you asked me what my specialty was, that would probably be what I would say. And, you know, how does somebody come to this point? Well, when I was in college and was involved in training to be a missionary, one of the big questions we had to struggle with was, how do we know what to do on the mission field? I mean, that was a really big question. What can women do? What can women not do? Can we be deeply involved? Can we not be deeply? I mean, that was just the big thing. And we discussed it a lot in my missions classes. And sometimes that was a conversation stopper. Ask the wrong teacher, if you don't want to have class discussion for the rest of the time period, ask a teacher, the wrong teacher, like, okay, so what do women do on the mission field? I don't know. So that was one of the things that led me to this, because I wanted to be here since I was very interested in ministry and try to provide some sort of guidance and support for women that were trying to seek a way to do that. So when we got back from Hungary, I went from having a role, missionary wife, to sitting in a pew at a large congregation and trying to figure out how to get involved. And so that's quite a transition as well. And I just, during that time period, just really developed a heart for women and for women's studies and for, you know, helping women be able to feel comfortable teaching and being active at church. And it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of something that really touched my heart and got into me. So that's why I've come down this path. Now, thinking about how we can be influential on women, the way I want to approach this today is I have some things that I want to share with you. I will talk with you all day long about my dissertation if you would like me to. But I'm aware that that's not necessarily a really exciting topic for some people. So there are several things I have pulled out of this that I would like to present and discuss. And then hopefully towards the end, maybe you can kind of signal me at 45 after or something. And hopefully towards the end, we'll have some time for Q&A. So kind of be thinking about what types of questions you might have, and we can kind of go down some of those rabbit holes and just maybe answer some questions you've come with today. Now, who do women follow? Okay, women in general are pretty picky, okay? Why? Why are women picky? Well, because they're busy. They're very busy. They've got lots of things on their plate. There are all sorts of family things going on. There are children who need assistance. You know, there's just all types of things they have to do. So when it comes to how they're going to spend their time and what they're going to get involved with, if they feel like it's a waste of time, they're probably not going to show up. You know, it's just as a general rule of thumb in women's ministry. And that's true with spiritual development as well. So if something is there, an activity is there to try to be a spiritual development activity, if they can really see a difference that is making a difference in their life, then they're probably going to go, you know. Some years ago, this is kind of a joke in our house now, but I got involved in scrapbooking. And when the kids were little, I felt like that was a hobby that had some benefit to my family. At some point along the way, my MDiv, that kind of fell off, and somebody I scrapbook with says, you scrapbook once a year. That didn't count as a hobby anymore. So, and now I do digital scrapbooking occasionally, and I've got a lot of catching up to do. But, you know, so that's a hobby I picked up. I felt like it added. We at least have picture books for some of the years that our children have been alive. And so that's kind of the way women tend to think things through. So the three big things I want to take a look at, though, today are affirmation, example, and teaching style. And so I think those are three practical areas that we really need to take a look at. So affirmation. I will admit I'm not a real big fan of this word. But I don't know another word to use for it. Like when I say affirmation, I want to affirm somebody, that can sound positive or it can sound shallow. And I'm not trying to go for the shallow sense. Affirmation with women plays a very important role, because before women can develop spiritually, or before women can develop to where they're really active, or they're able to take a more active leadership role, and I'm not, you know, trying to cross over any sort of boundaries here into something that's, you know, we wouldn't agree on, but they have to know that they have been gifted to do it and that it's okay for them to do it. And that's a really important part. That comes out in a lot of different pieces of research. So affirmation, if you think of a better word, please tell me, okay? Because I'm seriously, I'm playing with this. I just graduated in June. I'm still playing with these concepts some. But affirmation. Now, I see a lot of really talented and conscientious women who hold themselves back. Why do they hold themselves back? Because they're conscientious. They don't want to do anything that's wrong. They don't want to overstep any boundaries. And so I see people that are gifted in areas that they're really, I don't even think there should be a question in most churches. And they just, they don't know how involved they can be. Can I do this? Can I not do this? I kind of overthink, you know, things. I just want to be really, really careful. And so affirmation in a case like this would definitely give them permission to move forward and be involved. Women often don't recognize the importance of being involved at church. Okay, so they don't recognize the importance of that. They don't understand that they're making good contributions. A woman who is struggling with this would greatly benefit from affirmation. Or what about spiritual gifting? Now, who can tell me chapter and verse where it says in the Bible that only men receive spiritual gifts? It's not in there. So women have spiritual gifts. They have things they've been gifted with to do. And women should receive affirmation and helping identify those. And one of the things I do with my women's ministry classes is I have a unit on spiritual gifts. And we look at them and we talk about them. And I try to help them be able to identify where and how God is using them in different areas. And one of the key components of spiritual gift discovery is somebody saying, hey, I saw you working with the girls in the youth group. And man, they were really listening to you. You were good. You know, I mean, God was using you. That's important. Because when we identify and name what we see in somebody else, then they can say, wait, maybe there's a spiritual gift at play there. So affirmation is really important there. Or this is interesting. Okay. Now, those of you that have had children, had to care for somebody who was sick, or had to care for a parent, did you learn anything from that? Did your character develop at all? I would think so, okay? Now, this is an interesting thing, too, because a lot of times we tend to discount those times in our lives. I had 3 children in 3 years. So, and it was crazy. And so we were missionaries at first, and then we transitioned into, you know, being here. And we were very active, but it was crazy. I mean, if you had to ask me, what's your job description? We did a lot, okay? I was really big on, like, at-home preschool stuff. I didn't push them. We had lots of downtime where they could do free play. But we did things. But I would say, I think I change diapers and fill sippy cups. I think that's what I do. Like, that would be my job description I would have written for myself. But we downplay that. Am I learning anything in this time period? Yes, I am. I'm learning something. And that is something that is often overlooked when we're looking at spiritual development, is the development that's going on. A woman, okay, thinking of, at it from this perspective, a woman during this time period is learning as much character development-wise as somebody who's in the ministry. Okay, so skills, a little different. Granted, we can do all kinds of things, both hands, one hand, anything. But character development-wise, it's the same. Yet we discount that time period in our lives when we're busy caring for other people. And there has been a suggestion by Elizabeth Luttrell Glanville. She is also a Fuller grad. And she looked at some stuff. She thinks we should add a motherhood phase, or, you know, some sort of caring for somebody else phase into spiritual development, because so many things are learned. But somebody who's in this time period needs to be affirmed. You need to say, yeah, this, you're not wasting your time. You're investing in your children, but I can also see a change in you. You know, I can see you growing up. And we probably, if you've had kids, you know how quickly you had to grow up when you brought that bouncing bundle of crying joy home with you that needed to be taken care of every 30 minutes. So without appropriate affirmation, some women feel excluded. They're not really sure what to do. I see a lot of frustration. I see aimlessness. That's not good for anybody. We need to have some sort of direction that we're moving towards. Some women are frozen. These are the same women who really don't want to cross a line, trying to think things through. What do I do? Some give up. And the biggest thing that I'm seeing that really, really concerns me is we're losing a lot of very talented and active women from the Church of Christ into, you know, other areas because they can't figure out where or how they fit in. And that's a real problem. And I know in some cities where I've been talking with people, they are noting large amounts of women that are leaving our movement. That's something we should really be concerned with, you know. So the presence of affirmation. Okay, so if we empower women to become fully contributing members of the church, then what could happen? Now, my background is from a very small congregation in Northeast Oklahoma. I grew up in Grove, Oklahoma. We moved here when I was 16, and then we went to the largest church we could find, which was across the street, kind of got both extremes there. But that's my church background, a small church. And in a small church setting, it is all hands on deck, you know, because you only have so many people. You have to have people in all those classrooms. We had a bus ministry. We had a benevolence ministry. So I got to do a lot of really cool ministry type things with my mother and my grandmother. My mother's actually here today, so which is awesome. But, you know, I got to do that. I got to be a part of that. And so that's really huge. Now, today we have something interesting going on, and that is that we are losing the battle with influencing our culture. We are losing the battle in our cities. We have rampant problems everywhere, and every time we turn around, there's something else. And so I would propose that we are in a similar situation in our society where we need to be all hands on deck. There's so much that has to be done. We don't have time to get all focused on, well, if I can't have this role, then, you know, I'm not important. The Bible doesn't say that anywhere. Every time it talks about roles, it talks about the importance of everybody. And, you know, we can't get focused on one or two or three specific little things. We need everybody doing everything humanly possible out in the community, out and around, just trying to be a light because we're losing, okay? Now, the advantage of losing, because I'm going to flip this here, is that we are going to shine brighter when we're doing it. So that's a positive, and we can see that in church history. So that will be, that'll help us out some. Now, I first started teaching at Harding spring of 2006. And at the beginning of my teaching time, I remember giving examples in a class I taught called Acts, you know, so Acts of the Apostles. We just focused on the one book. And sometimes I would say, you know, this could happen. And I would give an example of something that could happen. And then my students would get mad at me. That will never happen. We live in the United States. We have religious freedom. But what's happening? The examples that I was proposing. Now, what scares me is I hope that I don't make more examples and scare them and that they actually happen, because I don't think we're going a very good direction in our culture with religious freedom. But there has been a real, real change. Now, something else affirmation can help with. So it can help us want to be involved in, you know, some of these situations. But it can also help us, especially with women, to reframe a weakness as a strength. Okay, let's play with vulnerability. Does anybody have a significant male figure in your life that will not stop to ask for directions? Okay, I mean, and I know we always mention that, but we always mention it because it's just so real, right? So because why? Because that would appear vulnerable or weak or helpless, and we're not going to admit that. So we're just going to go down that road until we think we're supposed to turn left and whatever. Thankfully, phones have saved us occasionally. But, you know, but we can kind of see that with some of, you know, people that are close to us in, some, well, our male counterparts that are close to us. So, but what about those? Are those really weaknesses? Well, our society says that they're weaknesses, but are they? When we're thinking about different situations that women get themselves in, I mean, how many times have you cried at a Hallmark commercial? Me, all the time. Hallmark movie gets really annoying because everybody down on the other end of the couch, I sit on one end, it gets to a touching part. Are they watching the screen? No, they're watching me to see when I'm going to take off and start crying. And so that's just what they do. But is that a weakness? Not necessarily, no. I mean, that is a strength because then I can talk to somebody, have empathy, care about what they're feeling, and that's a strength. So one of the things that we need to be cautious about is what is labeled as weaknesses, you know, for so helping women be able to identify some of these things as being strengths. Have you ever thought about the relationship of women's ministry to the next generation? It is huge. This is huge. And this is really one of the things that started driving me to get into this area. I had an experience where we were teaching a group of children. And this group of children that was upper elementary school, they explained to me as we broke out, I got to teach them Acts of the Apostles, so excited, but they explained to me that it had absolutely nothing to do with the struggles that they were facing. The Bible didn't have anything to say about them, and I was in complete shock because I knew some of these kids. And so how in the world could this happen? Well, let's think about it. I started interviewing people. I started talking to youth ministers, every one of which looked at me and said, "Are you serious? What planet have you been on?" They used different words, but they didn't mince words at all. They're like, "We see this all the time." And so it got me curious what we're doing to allow a thought like this to enter into somebody's head. Well, a lot of times we get busy, okay? Granted, we're busy. But we don't allow children to see what we're thinking. We don't allow them to see our thought processes. And so let's say you have a friend or somebody at church, somebody you work with that's difficult to get along with. We tend to try to hide that. We don't talk about it. We don't talk out loud and say, you know, this is a struggle, but I know that the Bible says this, you know, or ethical issues. There's no end. We've got some crazy stuff, unbelievable stuff. What about this Planned Parenthood selling babies thing? That's crazy. What about stuff like that? Ethical issues. Do we protect our children from it or do we talk out loud? I think there's an advantage to talking out loud because when we talk out loud, we're allowing them to see the thought processes that should drive and guide a Christian's thinking. Okay, so with this being a challenge that we have in front of us, what would happen if a large number, or let's just be idealistic and say all the women at our church were actively involved in Bible study, trying to actively be involved in their community, and deeply thinking and reflecting on challenges that they're facing? Okay, women are just around kids more than men. I mean, not saying men can't be involved, because my husband's very involved in the lives of our children, but we're just often around children more than men are. And that would have a huge, huge impact on the lives and the spiritual development of those children. So think about this, church history. First time I mentioned this to my husband, this is what he thought of. So I'm thinking about doing a degree in Bible. He said, well, I was already in one, and I was thinking about doing the next one. And he said, well, he said, you know, all those early restorationist preachers and all those missionaries that we study about in church history class, who was taking care of the kids while they were off doing these awesome things? Their wives were. You know, they were at home, and they were strong spiritual examples for their children. And so that's something that's really important. Another thing that I think is interesting is a lot of the early Christian martyrs that we see had strong spiritual mothers and grandmothers. You know, there were people in their lives that were encouraging them to take the right stances, and I think that's something that we've got to do. One of our children was assigned to come home and ask us if they had to make a decision If they were standing in front of a firing squad, what would we want them to say? And so I had to answer. I said, there is only one answer. If you have to say, I'm a Christian, I believe in Jesus, or I don't, I said, there is only one answer that you have to do. And so, and we explained it. And in fact, the person who assigned its mom is in this classroom. So, but, you know, that's something that we need to, you know, really think about, is the strong impact that we have on our children. And what about going into ministry? I've known several people, especially men. We've got a preacher crisis. We're short on preachers. But I have known several that really had a heart for going into ministry but didn't, because their mother wanted them to choose a profession that made more money. There are no guarantees in this world. I know unemployed lawyers, doctors, businessmen. So do you. You know, there's no guarantees. God's got it. He's going to make a way for that. But that's, we can have a big impact on the church just by providing affirmation. So, okay, now let's talk about example. When I talk about example, I want to start out by defining a few different things here. First, role model, okay? Because I hear a lot of people talking about mentors, but I think they're really talking about role models. So a role model is a person that is looked up to as an example to be imitated. This is more distant, still powerful. We can have a role model. Yeah, don't laugh. Well, you can laugh. Okay, we could have a role model that's in the presidential election, okay? So, but, you know, we can look at somebody, study them, learn, you know, what type of decisions do they make? How do they incorporate their Christianity into it? So, but, you know, we can have a role model anywhere. I hear a lot of people, this disturbs me a little, but I hear a lot of people picking role models from different people out of Hollywood. You know, I'm always like, be careful, because we don't know what's going to happen next year, you know, so. But people pick an example and try to imitate them, try to follow them. A mentor. I think mentors are something that we probably have a better picture in our head of, but I do make a distinction between a role model and a mentor. A mentor is somebody you actually sit down with and have a conversation with. So, and have deep conversations with. You ask questions, they ask questions. They get to know you, and there's investment. It's somebody that you can kind of mine their experiences and see. Say, like, did you ever experience this? What did you do? You know, so that would be a mentor. And then there's also somebody that I call a coach. And a coach, that might be a metaphor that you have a picture in your head of, too. I was never on an organized sports team in high school or junior high, so I don't have a picture in my head of this, but I can see what our children are doing and kind of see that, too. But a coach is somebody that gives advice but doesn't have the same strong connection as a mentor. So that's the main difference there. Now, so with these three definitions in mind, let's talk some about some things that I found in my research. So early last semester, so early in the spring semester, I gave a survey to all of the sophomores at Harding. And I had great participation. The only class I didn't give it in was a Chinese class, because most of them aren't Christians. They're here. We're trying to evangelize them. So we didn't do that one. And so, but I gave this to everybody, men and women alike. And I was really curious to see what their responses were going to be about, you know, various things. And so with this research, this is what I'm going to be presenting here with some of this. And I also had to do a lot of background research leading up to it. And so I'll share some of that as well. Now, in wider research, not just my research, it points to the importance of same gender examples. And I think that this probably may make a lot of sense. So there's something, a term that we use in anthropology called enculturation. And enculturation is when we teach people how to behave, how to act. And we often look to same genders for this. So enculturation takes place on a very organic and natural level. You sit at the table, your child puts their face in their food and starts eating like a dog, and what's going to happen? This has happened at our table before. You're probably going to get on to them and say, what are you thinking? Are you serious? Like, did I raise you to be like this? No, I didn't. So pick up your fork and eat like a human being. You're not a dog. So, but we're going to give these little tips. So we're kind of shaping, to pick up on another term you might be familiar with. So we're kind of shaping them to behave a certain way. And so with this idea of same gender examples, often girls look to girls to try to figure out how they're supposed to be. How am I supposed to behave? What am I supposed to be as a woman? How do I become a woman? Okay, guys look to guys. This generally extends into the churches and spiritual development as well. And this is just widely supported in various areas. So what we would expect to see when we were asking who is the most important person in your life, you know, as far as to show you how to develop spiritually, was it a female spiritual example or a male spiritual example? The results we would expect, and what has been found in other settings, is that men would overwhelmingly choose male spiritual example, and women would overwhelmingly choose female spiritual example. So in the research that I did here, 83.3% of men said male spiritual example. Okay, so that would be expected. 51.1% of women said female spiritual example, and 42.9% said male. That's different. That's off. So we're not the same as all of the other studies that have done this. I thought that was really interesting. That was a very significant result for me, because that made me ask the question and really want to say why. I mean, why is it that just 51.1% of women chose females and that's it? You know, is it, I can't answer these for sure. I can only kind of guess because I didn't ask a follow-up question about this one. Is it that we're not providing strong female spiritual examples? Okay, if you look back at our theology, typically we look to two or three different positions in our church, and we say that's leadership. Okay, now I'm not going to get into all of this, but is that what we see in the Bible? Only look to two or three different positions. I mean, Jesus, yeah, he was Messiah, but he showed leadership through love and care and something we called servant leadership. You know, so maybe we need to reframe our base of who we can look at to try to figure out how to be. But I thought that was interesting. Also, I mean, if 42.9% of women said that it should be that they look to men to try to, you know, get encouragement or figure out how to develop spiritually, then could this play into the women's issue that we're dealing with right now? Okay. So let's say that there is a woman who has what we might consider non-traditional gifting, okay? So non-traditional gifting, one that we typically don't see in our movement. How is she going to learn how to be as a woman? And we have a lot of women that have very upfront leadership gifts and things like that. But maybe we're not providing examples for them. Maybe we're not providing an opportunity for them to develop. And I'll talk in a few minutes about how important that is that we do that. But I just think that that's interesting. Another thing that really caught my attention, though, is 2.6% of women said they had nobody ever encourage them to develop spiritually. And I only had one male student that said that. But the 2.6% equaled 9 female students and then one male student. Now, that's 9 women and 1 man too much. I mean, I don't think that there should be anybody that ever is able to get to a Christian university, had any experience in any church, that should not be encouraged to grow spiritually. So I find that to be alarming. Now, when I think about it, and I don't know, that's scary. That's scary that there are women out there that nobody has ever tried to encourage, okay? So I think we really have to have eyes for that. Now, when we're thinking about where encouragement comes from, men, so the major sources for them, for our male students, were friends and peers, role models, mentors, leadership opportunities, and family. And if I had to make a list of the most important sources, it would probably be, you know, these. So men, male students, are being encouraged more through these avenues than female students. Okay. So maybe that means we need to step up here. But for women, two of the most important things were local church. Local church is extremely important to women. And then also outreach opportunities, because you get into outreach, you get into the community, and I think that there's kind of a wider base there for the types of things that you can do. You can show leadership by, you know, through service somehow. So, but those were very important to women. So what does this tell us? Women need really strong female examples of spirituality. When they need to be able to look at somebody, we need to stop, take the time to allow somebody to have a conversation with us, to get involved with a mentoring program, to have coffee with somebody, and they need to be able to see those examples of spirituality. They also need to see women who are active at church. They need that, okay? And why? Well, because they're creating their own constructs for how they can be. But it also, it's going to tie into development here in a minute. And I keep saying I'm going to talk about it, and I promise I will. And then also leadership, because our worldly ideas about leadership have often seeped into the church. You know, again, I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole here. But when we think about elders and deacons, if we were to create like a hierarchy of the church, it'd probably be like, well, elders and then deacons. Well, deacons are like junior elders. Does the Bible teach that? No. Okay? But that's just one example where we can see that worldly thinking has kind of seeped in. So women need living examples. Now, one of the other things that came out, and I saw it in wider research, it came out in my research as well, is the experiential nature of female spiritual development. So women need to be able to get involved. So it's not enough just to talk about service. We need to actually do service. It's not enough just to talk about missions. We actually need to go do missions. And there's more at stake even than just helping in the community or having a missions experience, and that is their own personal spiritual development. So women are much more concrete, much more experiential. They like examples, they like people, thinking about people, looking at people. Those are some avenues where they really experience some growth. So that is something that we really need to consider. So that example of somebody who's active at church and maybe bringing somebody along to also be active at church, that's not just providing an example, that's actually providing an opportunity for spiritual growth for that individual, you know, that younger person or younger person in the faith that you pulled along with you. So we need more of that. We need more role models, mentors, and we need people, both spiritual mothers in the church to work with our women, but also spiritual fathers. And wider research will say, you know, it's really important for there to be a man who says, you know, you can do really good at this. You know, I think that you would be really good in this area. So spiritual fathers are also important. Now, my research, I believe, is pointing to an unintentional overlooking of our women in our churches, especially our younger women, but women in general. I can see that. I've seen figures. I've read books. I've read articles. Women, once they get into more of the empty nester phase, they're leaving. Why? Because they haven't gotten involved. Women who were younger, especially if they transition out of someplace like Harding, and they leave and go back to their churches, that's a rough transition to begin with, because you had youth group in many times, and then you had college, and then now what? You've got now what? Where do you fit in and all? And so that's a rough transition. And so we see a lot of women leaving in that transition as well. So we really need to spend some time thinking about this. Okay. And again, let me just say that because local church is extremely important to the women that I surveyed, I think that that points to the importance of this. You know, we can't say that, well, you know, church isn't that important to women because, yeah, guys are getting opportunities to do stuff, and so for women it's not as important. They can just do stuff in the community. The women that I surveyed seem to have a very high respect for it, and I think that should be a big encouragement there. So we definitely need to try to provide these opportunities. Now let me share with you a few things of background studies that I looked at to help me develop the way I was thinking. I think this will be helpful, especially for those of you that are working in a setting where you're having to teach women. So there is a book called Women's Way of Knowing, and it looks at truth, knowledge, and authority. So women and their understanding of things, their concept of knowing, and their own self-concept is often intertwined. The reason that this book was created, because just as these ladies were working with different women, they noticed that there were a lot of struggles. There seemed to be developmental gaps, lack of confidence, women's thinking, you know, for I don't know how long, it's the beginning of the world maybe, I don't know. But women are often labeled as emotional. I can't deny it. But, I mean, it happens. So, but women are labeled as emotional, intuitive. We have a feeling, you know. So we just get this gut level feeling about stuff, personalized. And these things should not be relegated into something that is less important. These are gifts that God gave us. Why? Probably because we're having to care for people. And so, you know, God gave us these gifts. But those were often looked down on. I mean, think about it. In a business setting, in an academic setting, in a church setting. So you're working on something, and then if somebody starts to get emotional, well, that's our society says, no, that's not okay, right? So, but that's, they're trying to kind of reframe some of these things. Now, developmental theory. This is interesting, too, because I mentioned before that the time that we spend caring for other people actually contributes to our development. Here's something that's interesting, and that is that when these spiritual development scales were developed, it actually overlooked them. So what that means is that, you know, if you took a large swath of men, you took a large swath of women, men would actually score higher on spiritual development than women would. Because men's spiritual development, it's more tied to being able to stand out, be the lone ranger, make a decision nobody agrees with and go with it. But women's spiritual development is often tied to larger and tighter connections with somebody. And that comes with some of the roles that we have to fill, having to, you know, provide care for somebody over a long period of time. And so that was overlooked. That's interesting. Now, some feminists come back and say, no, it is. They've got to be able to stand out and just kind of go off and leave everybody behind. But just from what I have noticed with the way, you know, women have to live their lives and stuff, I think that there's something there that we've got to consider. So the five ways that women can learn. So there's one way called silence. This is really important. Because if you are doing any sort of work with women who have had a bad background, bad experiences, this is important to realize. So the women who are the youngest or have had the most socioeconomic challenges use this. That means they can only learn through concrete and specific behaviors. Words have often been used to abuse them. And because words were used to abuse, they can't learn through them. This is really surprising. I remember when first time I read this, it was really shocking to me. So let's say they go to school. It's going to seem like a flood of information, and it doesn't promote their development. So we need to, you know, be cautious with that. Receive knowledge. This is something where they are, you know, being able to get knowledge from somebody else, somebody that's using received knowledge. They actually think that everybody gets their knowledge from someplace else. And so they'll often quote authorities or quote an author. They don't think that there's somebody out there that's constructing knowledge. Then you have a couple of other types that are in between here, subjective and procedural. But then constructed knowledge means somebody who uses this type knows people construct knowledge. Now, it's important to be able to identify this and know that this exists, because if you're teaching a Bible class with women, you may have some women who are using silence, you may have some women who are using received knowledge, and then you may have some women who are constructing knowledge. And a lot of times we can see issues come up. You know, somebody could get frustrated with somebody else because of the method that they're using, but just be aware that that exists, and that's something that we need to consider. So, okay. Now, let's also talk here about different ways that women think through things. And this is from Nicholas Lee. This is in Women's Faith Development. So there are six processes that women use to discern pattern, meaning, and coherence in their life experience. So, and just think of these as a way to incorporate into Bible classes. So conversational faithing, the act of getting women to talk things through is really important. So ask them a question, what does it mean to be a Christian in the 21st century? What does that look like? As they talk, as they say things out loud, they're thinking out loud and they're processing. And so conversational faithing is one thing that women use to help grow spiritually. Also metaphoric faithing, using metaphor. You know, doing this is like going to Starbucks and getting a cup of coffee, you know. So just something that they see, something they can identify with. And I know in my own life, I feel like, you know, God's really kind of pointed things out to me as I'm thinking through something, saying, look at this, look at this, look at this, but has given metaphor. Or narrative faithing. We learn a lot from talking with other people, and this is going back to that idea of connection. Women grow through connections, and that's important. It's not just that we're trying to buddy up with somebody and hang out. That's an important part of our spiritual development. So when somebody is sharing a story or a faith story, you know, this was a struggle that I had, or this is how I came to faith, then it's allergy season. So then this is actually them offering something that other women can mine and learn from. Or personalized faithing. So if I had to ask people, and I've asked people before, what is faith? I mean, I always have students that raise their hand and say, there was this woman that I went to church with, or was this man or this family, and there is an example. In my own head, when I think of faith, I have examples in my head of people who have lived that out for me, and I've been able to see their examples. And so personalized faithing is a term that we use. I think God puts people into our life to allow us to be able to see what this could look like with skin on. You know, it's an abstract concept, but women, we need concrete, and this is the way we can use that. Apophatic faithing. This is one that's interesting, because this is basically saying what it isn't. What's love? Well, I'll tell you what it isn't. You know, what is faith? Well, it's not this. So a lot of times women who have had some sort of negative experience, especially if it's a negative experience with church or maybe some sort of spiritual struggle that they've had, they'll say what it isn't. Now, I think that this is helpful. Like if you were going to write a paper in college, your English teacher would probably say, look up the definition for what you want to talk about and then look up the antonym, because we can learn a lot from what something is, and then we can refine our understanding of it by looking at what it isn't. And so I think that's what apophatic faithing is, but that will probably pop up in your classroom. So if you hear that, it's not them just being negative, okay? I mean, it is them trying to refine and define what it isn't so we can understand what it is. Because maybe they haven't seen a good example of it, you know? You can learn a lot from working for a bad boss, for instance. I hear this time and time again. Fortunately, I haven't had that experience. So, but you can learn a lot about what not to do by watching people's mistakes. And that's kind of what this is, okay? So conceptual faith, this is abstract. This would be using analysis, reflection, but women are often going to root that into personal experiences. So when it comes to a classroom setting, one of the things that we need to remember is that women are different, okay? So there's no standard type of woman. Things are different with different women. Here's a good example of this. Would be when I asked the women, the sophomore women, what most encourages you in a Harding classroom. Had a big long list, choose one, okay? I had 27.8% choose theological discussions. This is very concrete, you know, this is something that's abstract. What most discourages you? I had 27.2% choose theological discussions. I was like, what in the world is that? That means like 55% of the women in any classroom, if we take this out and send it other places, it may be different generations, but 55% of women sitting in a classroom are having a love-hate relationship with theological discussions. I thought, why would they hate it so much? Well, maybe it's because of the arguments. Maybe they don't like seeing people get hurt, you know, or something. But I thought that was interesting. Also, when I asked them what encouraged them, this is interesting. What encourages you the most? Here's the list. Men chose theological discussions and understanding background at a higher rate than women. When women were asked what most discourages you, women chose theological discussions and understanding the background of professor comments as what most discourages them. What most encourages women in a classroom? Women chose reading the text. That's experiential, you know, getting into something. People in the Bible, connections, examples, okay? Professor comments, professor example, and influence of other students. So this is personal connections again. That's most encouraging. But for men, I cannot explain some of this, okay? But what most discourages them, reading the text, okay? People in the Bible, I mean, yeah, granted, there's some really bad examples in there, especially in the Old Testament. Professor example and influence of other students. So when we're studying, we need to try to create some balance. Biblical character studies are a really easy thing to go into. You can rotate through some of these different needs and different styles. You can be analytical and abstract and personal and give background information and make it narrative. That's a good one. Also, if you have a concept that's more theological you need to teach, do it in a concrete way as well. Do abstract and then concrete. So, but just be aware that there are different needs. Now, promise time for questions. So, what questions do you all have? I've got lots more. I never get through this in an hour. Yes.
But I've got to be kind of brave to ask.
Okay.
I've been a Christian for a while now. At our church, you hear during the preaching, mm-hmm. several women say amen. Mm-hmm. I would like to say amen sometime like the men, but there's a group of some men in our church that think women should be silent, not preachers.
Okay.
So is it okay for us to say amen?
Do you sing in church?
Yes.
Okay, well, that could inform that. I mean, I guess it depends on what the motivation is for it.
Okay.
So, but.
Next time I want to say it, I will.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
You said a word I was
familiar with, apophatic? Yes. Yeah. A-P-O-P-H-A-T-I-C. I hope I spelled that right, Mom, because I had trouble with spelling.
Yes.
Yeah.
We sort of have a sandwich generation left. Mm-hmm. A lot of our women 60 and older have said, I'm done.
Right,
and
yeah.
And they're there.
Yeah.
But are not really interested in being involved. So we're left with women in their 30s and 40s who are raising their own kids.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to do everything at church. And a lot of them are working outside the home. And we desperately need our older women.
Yeah.
Well,
we actually have somebody here that works a lot with that, Kay Gowan, and that's a trend she's noted and is very concerned about. I think we have to, well, first of all, they may be burnt out because maybe they were in a classroom for 20 years, but helping reframe what the need is, go back to Titus 2. Titus 2 doesn't give us an option not to be involved. It's a command. And just trying to help them understand the importance of that connection and just trying to create a vision for it would be my recommendation.